This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Future Farm Botanicals Liquid Wild Oil of Oregano with rosemary extract and natural honey flavor. Future Farm's Wild Oil of Oregano supports a variety of healthy benefits, including antimicrobial effects, as well as supporting the immune system. Plus, Future Farm is the first ever to formulate Wild Oil of Oregano with rosemary. Rosemary aids circulation, helps alleviate muscle pain, improves memory, and also gives your immune system a boost. The natural honey flavor enhances the taste while still giving you all of the benefits. For more information and to order, call 888-841-7216, 888-841-7216, or go to myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. That's future, P-H-A-R-M, myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Wild oil of oregano is all natural, science-based, and works without adverse side effects. MyFutureFarm.com/Hoffman. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. I hope you weathered this rather weird Thanksgiving well, and that you weren't too bereft of family contact and social interaction because of the lockdown. I had a very nice Thanksgiving. It was more the nuclear family and not the big gathering of a couple dozen people that we're usually accustomed to. We had a Zoom meeting, though.
Oh, nice. Very nice.
The Zoom meeting was, as usual, very unsatisfying because you got to see a lot of people.
Right.
But everybody's talking at once. And yeah, there's got to be a better way. There should have been a little better organization.
Virtual dinner party.
There could have been a little go-around, like everybody stay quiet while each person, says, that's the nature of this family.
Chaos ensued.
And it was funny, like one of the little kids, we wanted him to be in the Zoom conference and he looked at the screen and he saw all the people and all staring at him and going, hi, hello, hello. And he just started bawling. He's just turned 5.
Sweet
and it was
boy.
It was a little bit of sensory overwhelm, and I wonder, we adults, we sort of keep that sensory overwhelm at bay, but it is kind of scary, in a primal way to have a lot of eyeballs staring at you in the forest. That's sort of like...
Oh, an audience. Oh, no.
Yeah.
Something.
Right.
Yeah.
Although he's, performed in like little choirs in school in front of an audience. But this is a different kind of stage fright. Yeah. But anyway, so let's get to questions. And so on Facebook, this is not really the proper venue for questions. Radioprogram@AOL.com gets you directly into our email box for questions for Q&A with Layla. However, some people, they use whatever means of communication is at their disposal. Here's an interesting one that I got from the Philippines. Jay writes, I want to sail my one kidney. I need money to support my family. Please message Dr. Ronald. I'm here in the Philippines. I willing to all needed process. So, by the way, this is not... Facebook
this is on
not,
Facebook?
This is not the forum. He private messaged me. He PM'd me to say that he wanted to donate a kidney. I'm sorry. Thanks for your message. If you have a question or thought you'd like to share, I encourage you to use the link at the bottom of this message, which is...
Did you let him know that you're pretty full up and that's not the inventory you're seeking at this time?
we're looking for questions, not kidneys. But it kind of shows you the level of desperation. Okay. But we did get a good question from Tony.
Yeah.
Tony writes, did you see the latest headline from CNN, sir? And he refers me to a CNN article entitled, Fish Oil Doesn't Seem to Prevent Heart Problems, Studies Find. You may want to forget the fish oil supplements if you're hoping to prevent heart problems. CNN.com.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So... I shared with you some of the links to the studies.
Yeah.
And one of them was, there were actually a couple of them, so it's a little confusing. One of them was a study that attempts to see if fish oil is helpful for atrial fibrillation.
Yeah.
Which it never really was intended for.
I mean,
there is some evidence that Omega-3s are antiarrhythmic, but maybe more for ventricular arrhythmias than atrial arrhythmias. Because they, restore conductivity in some way. They make the membranes work better, and somehow that works out. But it turns out that atrial, and by the way, they also tested vitamin D. Vitamin D does not prevent atrial fibrillation, nor does fish oil, according to the study.
Right.
I will say this, is that fish oil might have a minor benefit in atrial fibrillation because it's a blood thinner. And we know that in atrial fibrillation, people get strokes. And so it might be that fish oil is a good thing to have on board. It won't stop your atrial fibrillation, but it might prevent the blood clot.
I'm paying attention to the wording here. Found that common types of fish oil, aka over-the-counter, may not be as beneficial for the heart as once thought. Found that the JAMA article found that high dose of omega-3 fatty acids did not reduce people's chance of experiencing a major cardiovascular event.
Okay, so this is a different study. It's a different study. And in that study, I looked at it, and if I recall correctly, the study went on for a couple of years, and they gave 4 grams of fish oil to people who were, and this is important, high risk for cardiac events. They had already had a heart attack, or they had coronary syndrome, angina. They're very high risk for cardiac events, which is actually a way you do to study, because if you do it on, you know, ordinary people like you and I, you know, you would have to...
You're not going
to
see anything.
You're not going to see... You have to have millions of people over, you know, 20 years, and then maybe you might get something of statistical significance. So you do a study on high-risk people because you're going to see some events. These people are likely to have subsequent heart attacks or something. So they did the fish oil, and they, the placebo, interestingly, was corn oil.
Oh, I remember that.
Four grams of corn oil versus 4 grams of fish oil, which was mostly EPA, but a fair amount of DHA.
Yeah.
Which is in contradistinction to a recent study called the Reduce-It study, which was done with a synthetic EPA, which is marketed as a pharmaceutical. Vascepa.
Vascepa.
And they got sensational results, 25% reduction in cardiovascular disease with the Vascepa, which is pure EPA. But then with this other, you know, probably less EPA because it's 4 grams of fish oil, but it doesn't mean 4 grams of EPA.
Yes.
And there's some DHA, so it's probably less EPA. So how do you reconcile those results? Well, one of the ways that you, you know, so it's like, and this is a big pharmaceutical company is marketing this. This is not the fish oil industry that, you know, sells in health food stores. This is a pharmaceutical thing that is prescription. It's covered by insurance now. And they want to push all doctors to get, you know, to prescribe it to their patients who have some cardiovascular risk, much like statins. So how do you reconcile those results? Well, the Reduce-It study has been criticized because they use as a placebo mineral oil.
Oh.
Mineral oil is not so good for you.
No.
In fact, what they found was that in the placebo people, they had a 30% increase in their C-reactive protein from the mineral oil.
Wow. Very, very pro-inflammatory.
Pro-inflammatory, or maybe
and it, mineral oil is depleted, it's a petroleum product.
It depleted some nutrients, possibly, because it can deplete vitamin D. And the
remember
fat
mineral oil in the days of our grandmothers when they were constipated?
Yeah, just a lubricant.
Like
it just a, it, yeah. it sort of like gives you an oil slick internally. So anyway, so they now say, well, we used a better placebo, corn oil. I would argue, is pro-inflammatory.
Absolutely.
But if anything... That should accentuate the difference between the placebo and the fish oil.
Yes.
So you can't really say, well, the corn oil was somewhat protective, just as if you, in some studies, they used olive oil placebo. And olive oil might be protective, so you won't see a big difference.
You're not going to see the significant difference between the two for that reason. Yes.
So the other thing about that study, in addition to these people being pretty sick with cardiovascular disease, is that they also... We're all on statins, so it might be that statins mask the benefits of fish oil for cardiovascular protection, because the statins have some intrinsic anti-inflammatory effects and cholesterol-lowering effects, and so it might be that in another study where people weren't already on statins, you might see the benefit of fish oil. But the study didn't last very long. It lasted for a couple of years, and it was in a population that was very sick. Which does not necessarily mean that an ordinary person, if they take fish oil for, you know, decades like we have, mm-hmm. you know, I presume you take fish oil. I take fish oil daily. I've been doing it for like 30 years.
Yep.
Would there not be some benefit in a non-diseased population? So I sometimes refer to this as the Lazarus effect. Is, you know, Lazarus, you know, to waken the dead.
Yes.
A lot of these scientific studies which are used to debunk supplements are used in the most extreme situations. Like they'll take somebody with hopeless metastatic cancer and give them vitamin C. And say,
It
didn't work. It's like, well, everything else failed, and they, you know, they had like, you know...
Just that, 60 milligrams of vitamin C.
They had metastasis in the liver and in the lungs, and, you know, they're just like... Yeah. It's not going to work. Mm-hmm. But could vitamin C be plausible as a preventive agent against cancer? Well, you know, I think the studies have been back and forth on that.
Right.
So to conclude, based on these two studies, that fish oil is useless, I think is, you know, again, it's this bad reporting.
Very bad reporting.
You know, and a lot of studies say, you know, there's an article in the Wall Street Journal, like, you know, did you succumb to this fraud of taking fish oil? You know, not, there's kind of overheated conclusions.
Really? Honestly?
So, now, let's say fish oil is not beneficial for the heart. Well, which it is.
It is, yes.
But what about its other benefits for the brain, for the joints, for mood, for the eyes?
For depression, for arthritis, for...
Many cancers.
Any kind, yes.
You know, so
yes. And all kinds of inflammation.
So, bottom line, I think it's a disappointing study.
It is.
I think there's some flaws to the methodology, but it is not the death knell for fish oil by any means. You know, just... No. But here's the other thing. How do you explain the tremendous disparity between the REDUCE-IT study, which was the platform for promoting VASCEPA, the pharmaceutical fish oil, versus the results that we see in this study, which are negligible?
Exactly.
25% reduction or zero? I mean, that's amazing. Okay, and we have some questions. Right?
Yes, we do.
So let's get to questions. Radioprogram@AOL.com is the destination for your volunteering to donate an organ. you know, whether it be a kidney or a liver or, you know, no, please, no organ donations, just questions.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, we have another, Dr. Hoffman. Bruce would like you to comment on some recent research about hyperbaric oxygen therapy. This is really, really interesting. A study finds hyperbaric oxygen treatment reverses the aging process. And what they found was really astounding, that just 3 months of this oxygen therapy were able to elongate telomeres. Mm-hmm. Telomeres, longer telomeres means longer life.
Right.
It was able to elongate telomeres at rates far beyond any currently available interventions or lifestyle modifications. That includes diet and exercise.
You mean I should
which is
stop?
Astounding.
I should stop running, bicycling.
I should stop everything. I'll just go in a chamber.
In a chamber.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Wow.
So we know that hyperbaric oxygen is good for so many things.
Yes.
Right. But this is really something.
Well, you know,
this is out of Tel Aviv University.
It's interesting in that oxygen is a two-edged sword, because we know, for example, that some of the people who are in the baby boomer generation who are blind were the result of overzealous oxygen therapy for kids who had respiratory distress. It was thought that if we gave them 100% oxygen and put them in an oxygen tent, it would help to revive them, you know, if they had some kind of birth complication.
Uh-huh.
And what ended up happening is that, you know, oxygen is a pro-oxidant.
Yes.
And it can generate free radicals.
Yeah.
And so too much oxygen can have a deleterious effect. Now, hyperbaric treatment is usually not done with pure oxygen. It's done with a mixture of oxygen and nitrogen, like room air, but under pressure.
Under pressure,
it seems to do something beneficial for, in effect, nourishing the cells. And, you know, this is an interesting result because we use hyperbaric oxygen for a variety of applications. It's controversial, but we use it for stroke recovery.
Yes.
We use it for patients who have like post-Lyme syndrome.
Yes.
Things, you know.
Even some neurodegenerative.
Neurodegenerative diseases.
I think to enhance healing from surgery, major surgery.
Yes, absolutely.
It's also helpful.
But, you know, traditionally it's used for people who have gangrenous wounds, you know, to promote blood flow, you know, or diabetic ulcers or things like that, because the circulation is compromised to those areas.
Yeah.
And then oxygen doesn't get to the tissue. So, yeah, very interesting.
Yeah.
Well,
and this was done on healthy and independent aging adults, and to discover whether these treatments can slow down, stop, or even reverse the normal aging process at the cellular level. That's what the scientists set out to do. So this is really something.
Yeah. But, you know, it's expensive. This would not be covered by insurance, but as a kind of a luxury treatment.
Sure.
It certainly is
They don't
plausible.
Give these out at free for free at medical conventions, Dr.
They actually, I mean, the some of the anti-aging conventions I go to, there are plenty of people who sell these tents.
Yes.
And you can get a home unit. The problem with a home unit is they can't be under enough pressure. And, you know, when we were at our previous location, I thought of getting hyperbaric oxygen. But in New York, they won't allow you to do hyperbaric oxygen except under the most stringent, in New York City, in Manhattan. You know, just like you can't bring a gas cylinder in for your barbecue, you can't have an oxygen chamber in high pressure in Manhattan except under the most stringent zoning and construction, so that you just can't install one.
No.
Because of the explosion risk under high oxygen.
Sure. Wow. So, this is really something. And this may become the next thing as baby boomers
the
are
next
set.
Big thing.
Never to age and never to die.
Yeah.
Yes. That is the quest.
Then I can stop exercising. I can stop eating. I can eat.
You can eat whatever. Hop into that chamber.
I can eat corned beef sandwiches and pizza and, you know, ice cream sundaes and just hop in that chamber.
That's it. Just hop in that chamber. Oh, my goodness. All right. Bruce, thank you very much for that. We've got a question from Amanda. Hi, Dr. Hoffman. I've been reading your book on natural therapies for mitral valve prolapse.
That's such a perennial book. I think I wrote that 25 years ago, but I still get royalties.
That's great.
I think I got $57.
It's a great book.
I got $57. I checked.
That's good. Does the advice or exercise advice remain the same if I have mild to moderate regurgitation?
Okay. So for our listeners who are not familiar with mitral valve prolapse, it's a condition of a floppy valve in the heart.
Yeah, that you're born with.
That you're born with or that you can develop and worsen. There's a genetic predisposition. It can also be caused by, perhaps in the old days, rheumatic heart disease would cause, mitral valve damage. Not prolapse. Mitral valve prolapse is more of a hereditary
trait. It's more of a phenomenon.
Right. Yeah. And we think it's also associated with autonomic sensitivity and autonomic instability. So I wrote that book for people with mitral valve prolapse. Regurgitation means that the valve is so floppy that it doesn't close properly and there's backflow.
Yeah.
And for most people with mitral valve prolapse, there's a little bit of regurgitation.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's very severe regurgitation, then the valve is not pushing the blood along. Time for valve replacement, yes. But so they monitor it very carefully. Mm-hmm. They look at what's called an echocardiogram or a transesophageal echo, and they look at your cardiac output and they look at the flow dynamics to see if there's regurgitation. So the question was, are my recommendations applicable to that?
Is it the same if there's also regurgitation, not just plain old MVP, but with regurgitation?
Yeah, that should be. I mean, the things we'd recommend, coenzyme Q10 and magnesium.
Amanda is an otherwise healthy 43-year-old female. She'd recently been having strong palpitations and skipped beats.
Not uncommon in this.
But following starting a new job, which was very stressful.
Okay, stress will do it.
So her GP did an echo, and that's what they found.
And the GP didn't do anything because they said, well, you have mitral valve prolapse, no big whoop, we'll monitor it.
Yeah.
But it's very disconcerting for those people. They also have heightened sensory awareness of their heartbeats. They can feel their heart.
Yeah.
And they can, it's disconcerting to feel those palpitations.
She said the GP wasn't overly concerned, except that I've also shown some ventricular beats and a stress echo showed some weird beats in my septum.
Well,
is that like TMI,
having been
something?
Diagnosed with this, you have a passport to subsequent echoes and possibly Holter monitors so that we can keep an eye on this over time. But, you know, I would not stress inordinately because this is a benign arrhythmia. This is not the kind of arrhythmia that gives people heart attacks or strokes or can devolve into a fatal arrhythmia.
I would also tell Amanda, it's very important to have your blood sugar stable at all times.
Yes.
Because unstable blood sugar can set this off.
Right. And many of these people have a gene which makes them susceptible to the effects of caffeine and stimulants, too.
Mm.
So another, you know, you may not want to take decongestants with,
cause high blood pressure in some people, too.
Ephedrine or Sudafed or things like that in them.
Right. Yeah.
You know, or Allegra D.
Yes.
You know, with the D meaning that it's a combination of an antihistamine and a decongestant.
Yeah. Which would do that, yeah.
So you want to take, for a cold remedy, you would take a nighttime cold remedy as opposed to a daytime. The daytime often has the decongestants, which can cause palpitations.
Yeah. So Amanda, make sure that you have regular meal times, that you're not going hungry for long periods of time, because low blood sugar can set this off. And you need to take magnesium the rest of your life.
Absolutely. Even dental procedures where they inject Novocaine with a little bit of epinephrine.
Yes, which they normally do now.
And you can get the Novocaine without the epinephrine if you're susceptible to heart palpitations. You can just tell your dentist.
Yeah. Okay. Amanda, thank you for that question. All right. Let's see here. We've got an email, no name here. Dr. Hoffman, do you think supplementing with 1 milligram melatonin daily or nightly offers any general health benefits? I've heard rumors, especially in relation to COVID prevention, but are there any general health benefits?
There's
1 milligram.
There is some evidence that melatonin is essential for protection against the COVID-19 inflammasome reaction, which is part of that. Inflammatory cascade that's triggered by the virus.
Yeah.
So it's unknown what level of melatonin is necessary for protection. It may be as little as 1 to 3, although I've seen some protocols for if you're sick with COVID, you might take 10.
Mm.
I've seen, and some protocols.
Right.
It's part of the protocol.
Right. And the time
in terms
to take
of
it,
other benefits, there's some benefits in terms of possibly breast cancer prevention.
Sure. Any cancer prevention.
Well, particularly the hormonal ones.
Mm.
You know, possibly prostate.
Okay.
So we give our patients who have those conditions 20 milligrams of melatonin, which seems to be the oncologic dosage. You know, the one that's applicable to cancers.
Right. It's known that shift workers have higher incidence of cancer because they're awake during the night and they're not making any melatonin.
Under fluorescent lights that abolish the nighttime production of melatonin, which gets produced in darkness.
Exactly. And fake darkness doesn't quite cut it when it's daytime outside, unless you live in a cave year-round, which is a different
matter. Very small amounts of light can abolish your pineal gland's production of melatonin.
You know, that's why even when you've got that digital clock on your nightstand, turn it away from you. Don't always be looking at that. Make sure there's no moonlight, you know, seeping through your windows. Draw the blinds.
Yeah, I always
close the curtains.
Don't want to know what time it is at night because that's that's a losing game. It's like, you know, it's like just sleep.
What time is it now?
Yeah.
What time is it now?
Right.
Forget it.
Good point at which to pause because we divide a podcast into two parts. So give us a preview of what we'll talk about in part 2, please.
What can I do about my SIBO, which is now mostly methane predominant?
Ooh, methane predominant SIBO.
As opposed to hydrogen predominant.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we'll tackle that in part two. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Radio program at AOL.com is the destination for questions. I'm with Layla Mutin, who's our nutritionist in residence, and we'll be right back with more of today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast.